Hey, everybody. This week's guest is Aaron Barrett from Real Big Fish. Dear friend of mine, Real Big Fish and Less Than Jake have done countless tours over the years. I've known Aaron for over a quarter century at this point. Every time we go on the road with him and his band, we have an absolute blast. Aaron chose a popular set closing song of Real Big Fish for years, Beer, to discuss today. We had a lot to talk about with that. Aaron talked about how he didn't necessarily think Beer was anything special as far as Real Big Fish songs go when he wrote it. He talked about how the original version of Beer had no horns and how producer Jay Rifkin added horns during the re-recording of it that he had cut up from another song. Aaron talked about how, regardless of the fact that Beer is a fan favorite, when they released it as a single, it got no radio play at all. Aaron talked about appreciating the fact that people still care and come out to see the band. He talked about how Beer was a song where he wrote everything, including the bass line, and how he keeps song ideas in his head. He figures if he can't remember it, then it wasn't catchy enough to remember. And I talked about how I've never blown into a trombone or a saxophone in my life, believe it or not. all this and much more. Stay tuned.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard?
I got to say to my listeners that, gosh, I've known Aaron for 25, God, longer than 25 years. Met Aaron in line at a show. There was a Chinese restaurant in L.A. Where the hell was that? It was called Dizzy Debbie's.
I have no idea. Somebody just took me there to see.
There was a weird phenomenon in the 90s where Chinese restaurants would hold punk shows. We played one in Seattle one time. I don't know what the thing was with that, but I don't think it exists anymore. But
I think it's like in the 90s they would just have shows anywhere, and I'm sure they were all illegal.
Yeah, you know, have some chicken chow mein and listen to the latest ska band in Southern California. It was
roll in for a load in. Like, oh, this is a nice warehouse. They're probably not safe to have concerts at.
This fresh-faced kid came up to me and said, "Hey, I like your band. I play in a band called Real Big Fish." And there you have it. That's how we met. And I'm super.
Oh yeah, because I had seen you play at the what's that place called? Showcase Theater in Corona.
Showcase in Corona. Yeah.
I'd seen you guys a little bit before that, and you were really good. I can't lie.
Well, thank you. And you know, I have to say that I am very thankful and stoked that you agreed to do this, because I'm just going to out you here. Aaron, you know, Aaron doesn't really like to do interviews, and the fact that you agreed to do this, I am over the moon. So thank you very much.
I don't like to do interviews, but I say yes to every single one.
Yeah. Well, back in the 90s, that's how we sold records, but I don't know why you have to do it now.
I just don't understand now.
So of course my podcast revolves around songwriting, and Aaron chose a Real Big Fish favorite, Beer, and I love this song. I've always loved this song. I never get sick of seeing you guys play this song live. The audience goes absolutely berserk when you launch into it. Typically it's a late in the set closer type of song, and it's just, it's fun. The chord arrangement's great. The melodies are great. I love the breakdown at the end. We'll talk about all this in a second, but take us back to when you wrote it. Do you remember where you were at or what you were doing when you wrote it?
It's so weird that people have always loved this song. Just ever since we first started, it wasn't even finished the first time we played it in one of those illegal warehouse shows. We're messing around with this new song, and like people start going crazy and like, oh, what's that one song? Ugh. Very strange. Just like, it's that magical song. I don't know. You know, sometimes you write a song and people just can't get enough of it.
And I'm thankful
that we did. But anyway, yeah, I mean, when I made it up, I was just kind of messing around with playing Offspring Self-Esteem.
Which is funny, because now when you guys play that live, of course, you know, during the bridge breakdown at the end, you'll go into that for a bit before you come into the last chorus. So that was kind of the inspiration behind it, huh?
Pretty much. I've just been listening to Sublime 40 Ounces of Freedom over and over and over and over again. and I had that stuff in my head, the sublimeness. And then I love the Offspring and that album and stuff. And I was trying to mess with that song. Maybe we could do a ska cover of Self-Esteem. Never mind. I'll make my own song that kind of sounds like Sublime influenced. I don't know how these things happen. That's how it goes with writing songs, right?
Well, you kind of answered my question. I always ask this question is like, what was the reaction? So, you know, you told me, you said like when you first would start playing it and, you know, back before YouTube and the internet, we used to go out and play songs that were half finished too. Cause it was this is a new song and we just wrote it in our warehouse and we want the world to hear it, you know? So we'd go out and play it and, you know, it'd be missing a chorus or a bridge and that didn't matter at the time. So the minute you guys went out and started doing this tune, you saw an immediate reaction. Yes.
We did. I somewhere have a video of the show, and it was like we had these horn players, and they had just quit, and we didn't have any new horn players yet, so we did this one show without any, and like that was a new song that kind of had a guitar lick and didn't really need horns. So I was like, oh, let's play this song for 15 minutes. And yeah, I didn't have any lyrics or anything. I just had like the riff, and we just kind of mumbling and singing some stuff. But yeah, it was just kind of, even then, I'm like, wow, people like this. I'm going to keep working on this song.
Yeah, that's an old joke. What's the curse of every ska band? Their horn section.
Oh my god!
You can relate.
That could be a whole other podcast.
Yes, you should start with that one. I'll come on. I'll be on yours.
What's the deal with horns?
So now so set it up. This was before, because this was on Turn the Radio Off. It wasn't released before. That was
it was on the album Everything Sucks.
Was on Everything. Okay, that's right. It was a re-recording for Turn the Radio Off, or was it just remixed?
It was re-recorded.
Re-recorded. Okay, which is my next question, because I couldn't find this out. Was it re-recorded for Basketball?
No, that was the Turn the Radio Off.
So you wrote it. Now, where was it in the writing process for Everything Sucks? Because Everything Sucks came out in 95, I believe.
Yes.
So do you remember, was it like
the 25th anniversary?
That's awesome. Do you remember writing it prior to the album, or was it like one of the last songs you wrote in the studio or something?
That was one of the earlier ones, like before, I don't know, just through 93 and 94, I was just kind of writing all the songs that were on Everything Sucks. So I don't remember exactly when it came out, but.
Well, I mean, said you were playing it, but I guess when was it? It was obviously finished when you went in to record Everything Sucks.
It was finished sometime in the mid 94, I think.
Okay.
And we made a demo tape, which everyone. Oh, no. No, there was an old demo tape and then there was another demo. Remember demo tapes?
Of course. We used to get bags full of them. We were on tour. We'd have them strewn all over our van. now people just send you a link on Instagram. Hey, here's my van. Check it out. It's on, you know. So
yeah, we put out a demo tape called Buy This, and that was on it, I think. And I Want Your Girlfriend, a couple songs.
So now, you know, we're going back a quarter century here, but like when you wrote it, did you think that this was going to be something special, or was it just another Real Big Fish song at that point?
I think it was just another Real Big Fish song. Like I like it. I think it's good, but it's not one of my favorites. It never grabbed me the way it grabbed everybody else. Uh-huh. That's weird. Like that's always the story with the band's best song. You know, it's like, we don't even like that song. We wrote it in 5 minutes. That song's stupid. But then, but that's your best song. How can you say that? But yeah, I see it from both sides.
Well, sometimes when you don't overthink it or overcook an idea, there's just something about that rawness that comes out that people gravitate to. You know,
I think it's a great song. It feels I love playing it. It's fun to start it off and just, I don't know, playing those first few chords, and I like playing the little solo and stuff. And
so who produced Everything Sucks, that record?
That was just
self-produced.
Studio doing, self-produced.
Okay, and then Jay Rifkin,
so awesome.
Jay produced the version on Turn the Radio Off.
Yeah, Jay Rifkin and John Evola.
That's right. And
so, yeah, let me tell you a story about that.
Please do.
Ready? So if you listen to the Everything Sucks version of Beer, it does not have any horns on it anywhere. And if I get drunk, well, I'll pass out on the floor now, baby. You won't bother me. But if you listen to Turn the Radio Off and all the other versions, then the little horn thing in the choruses comes in with.
Right.
That, no one ever played that on Turn the Radio Off. We came into the studio one morning and Jay Rifkin's like, "Hey guys, look what I did." And he had gone in with the computer editing stuff and created a horn line from another horn part in another song. And like, look, I put horns in the song. So we were forced by a record label to put horns on a song. Can you believe it?
Well, that's pretty crazy. That's pretty crazy too, because this is considering 95. I mean, Pro Tools wasn't really happening then. I mean, you had
program they were using, but
yeah, there was definitely digital editing software going on, but it wasn't so that's interesting. What were the horn players, anybody else, yourself included, pissed, or did you like it initially?
I think we all just went, yeah, that's cool. And he kind of explained like, well, you're a horn band and this is a great song, it's probably gonna be your big hit, so you're gonna want those horn players playing on your big hit because you guys are a horn band. It all made sense to us, so like, yeah, that's cool.
Well, what's interesting about that is that, I mean, you know, if you think of Real Big Fish, I mean, I would say your defining song is Sellout, but I'd make an argument for Beer because, you know, Sellout, I think, you know, had the more radio play as a hit single, but the mileage you got out of Basketball for this song is just incredible. Yeah. I mean, you know, you guys got on Basketball, Les and Jake got on fucking Good Burger. So I'm still pissed about that. Okay.
Hey, that's a great movie.
Yeah. We got the short end of the stick. So like what happened, because the record or Beer had been out for a couple years. When Basketball was what, 98? 99?
Yeah, I think it was 98.
So now the song
very, very late 97, I can't say. I think 98.
Right. So the song, you know, the sign, I knew it was late 90s. The song had been around in some form or another for like three years. It had been on Turn of the Radio Off for at least 2 years. And then the movie comes out. Do you remember like seeing the difference in playing that song from when the movie hit, like when you went to play live?
Well, that not really. I mean, everybody just kind of went crazy for that one always.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if Take On Me was a single first or not, but we did try to release Beer as a single and it just didn't catch on. We couldn't believe it. Like, everyone loves that song. Everyone goes crazy for it. We released it as a single. Nothing. No radio station would play it. No one cared.
Right. And isn't that strange? We've had it happen the opposite way too, where songs like connect on a record, but then you go play it live and it doesn't translate, or people are always ask for a certain song and you go play it and it's like crickets. You can't get a reaction out of it.
Weird. There's so many songs like that. Like, oh, you guys need to play this song, and you hear it so much and then you finally do and just stares.
Yeah. Blank, yeah.
Blank faces, confused.
So, you know, going back to that time, and this is a hard question to answer because I get asked this, and like, did you ever think that 25 years later, you'd be traveling the world playing this song and looking out? And, you know, I mean, we've done dozens of tours with you guys. I mean, I see you all over the world. We've played in Japan, Australia, all over England, Europe, the States, Canada. And I look out and people are going absolutely nuts when you guys play this song. Was there any thought back then of like, you know, it's 1998. Beer is one of our, you know, go-tos and we play at every show and people love it. And 25 years later, I'm still going to be playing this damn thing.
No, I back then, you know, we were so young. I couldn't even have imagined what being 30 would be like. You know, had no idea I'd be 45 playing these songs and people going crazy and still dancing to them. It's so right weird now, all these years later.
Yeah.
Still doing this.
So,
and people still come to see us and they still want to hear these songs. It's amazing.
No, it's weird. It's, yeah, it is. And I sometimes pinch myself. I don't know why the older I get, I'll be on like the tour bus. So, you know, I'll wake up at like 7 a.m. and I'll like, my eyes will like, you know, be rubbing the sleep out of them and be like, wait, where are we today? Wait, we're in St. Louis. Like, wait a second. People still want to see my band play. You know, it's like, and I don't say that in a self-deprecating way. It's just, you know, still living the dream after all these years. It's really, really cool. You know,
I think I appreciate it so much more than ever. Just what we have.
Oh man, I've said that. I've said that to so many people lately. They ask me,
about it. Like, there's kids in high school now would be listening to Real Big Fish. When I was in high school, I was listening to Led Zeppelin. That was the music of 20 years ago. Now,
you know, didn't it seem ancient?
I'm playing classic rock, and these kids are coming to see these shows. It's so strange.
Yeah, no, it's amazing though. So yeah, I think about that a lot too, and I just, like, it trips me out. So have you guys played beer at every show since you wrote it? Or has it ever been left off a Real Big Fish set?
I mean, I'm sure there's been one or two times. That's one we usually play, that one every time. But I mean, we did a couple festivals. I remember we played what's that festival in Florida? West Palm Beach. The Buzz Bake Sale.
Oh, Buzz Bake Sale, of course, yes.
We had like a half hour set and we got cut off, so we didn't get to play beer or Take On Me.
Which is weird.
Matt Wong sitting me down. He's like, we got to play those two songs every time. People love those. I'm like, yeah, I know, man. We got cut off.
So did you...
Very rarely do we ever not play those.
Did you write this song completely top to bottom by yourself? Or do you remember having help with anybody in the band? Did you write all the lyrics and the music?
Yeah. I mean, this is one that I wrote everything. I even wrote the bass line to this one.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Cool.
We don't have a lot of songs that are minor, so I think... Matt Wong was like, what do I play in this minor key? Like, oh, just play like something like this.
Right. So now you said that, and this is interesting. I haven't really touched on this with anybody on the show. You said that, like, you know, you heard this Offspring chord progression and you kind of came up with your own take on it. Do you tend to find, and this, you know, songwriters do this. I don't want to say guilty of it. That's a bad word. It's not like it's a ripoff. It's just, you get inspired by stuff. Do you still get inspired by, like, today when you're writing, like, you get inspired by something, maybe you hear something on the radio or you hear something new and you're like, that's cool. Like, I want to, like, form a song around it, or kind of how do you write these days? Do you just, like, you're sitting around and you're strumming an acoustic and an idea comes, or take us through the process
It's called creative borrowing.
I love that term.
Yeah, me too. I like that one a lot. Yeah. That's what I've always done, is just kind of, a lot of songs will start out as I'm just messing around trying to figure out some other song I like. Like, oh, that's a cool song. I can't figure it out. Well, I made my own. Cool.
Okay. Okay.
Or, you know, I don't know. I'm not the kind of guy who sits around noodling on a guitar all day. I don't even have a guitar in my house right now.
You don't? Well, that's what I was going to ask. So do you?
I don't.
Do you ever have, like, writing sessions, or do you?
No,
do you
I just kind of wait for ideas to pop into my head or whatever.
Okay. Okay.
So when all these little fragments of ideas until they form a whole song, and then I pull out the guitar and go, let's see.
Well, yeah, and everyone's different about that. That's why I always ask. So, like, do you, like, get into, like, you're getting ready to do, like, okay, we're going to do a new record in November and it's like August time. Like, do you go into, like, your iPhone and, like, start, you know, doing voice memos of riffs and ideas, or how do you do the process? Like, I have a home studio, so I do demos and I'll start sending them around to the band, and, you know, and sometimes it'll just be a riff, or sometimes it's a complete song with everything, you know, lyrics and different things, or, you know, how do you do it? Do you just, like, have everything in your head and you go into the band and rehearse, or do you demo them out beforehand?
I just keep, like I said, I keep these little song fragments in my head. Every once in a while I'll write down a lyric or something, or I'll record an idea, 'cause, like, that's really cool. Most times I don't even go back to those. I just figure, like, if I can't remember it, then it's not catchy enough or it's not good enough in the first place. So it's really weird. I'll have these songs, like the songs on the new album, Life Sucks, Let's Dance. Like, I've been humming those songs for years, some of them. And it's so weird to finally go in the studio and that, okay, guys, let's play. Here's how my song goes, because I've known it for years. And it's so weird getting it out of your head and into the world.
Right. And every band's different in that respect. So, like, when you get it on the floor and you know, you're in the cutting room with the band and you're rehearsing, does it at this point in your career, because, I mean, obviously you've been doing this long enough, you know how to write a song. Do you value the input, and do you look for it, or is the song pretty much done in your head and you're just kind of, everyone's playing the song how you hear it?
It always comes out a little different once it gets filtered through other people, and I'm happy to hear ideas and, like, maybe we could try this. I'm glad to try things. Cause I don't know. Right. I don't think it would be as good if it just came out of my head exactly as I imagined.
I've always marveled at that guys that can do it. You know, you hear of certain, you know, artists, they don't want a producer. They just want to do everything themselves. And,
yeah.
You know, I've always kind of just personally speaking felt like I like other people to hear my songs. You know, it's definitely the guys in my band. And I welcome working with a producer because I've always felt like some of my best songs were got to their best potential because other people were able to interject something. You know, sometimes you get too close to your own songs. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah. You just don't see, you love it. Like, oh, this is my baby. Oh, and even if it's just ugly and it's terrible, you can't see it. It's like, I made this. It's so precious. So yeah, it's good to get that outside perspective on it.
Yeah. I mean, I can probably count on one hand how many times I've, you know, done something and it's gotten changed to where I go back and go, you know what, the band was wrong. You know, this should have been how I had it envisioned, but 8.9% of the time it's, you know what, I can go back and listen to a demo and I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't double the chorus at the end when I thought that was perfect back then. What the hell was I thinking? You know? And it's because you're too close to it.
Yeah. It's the times that I got my way and like everybody just did exactly what I said. It's like, oh, that wasn't that good of an idea. Jeez, maybe I should have had somebody else help with that horn line there or something.
Well, yeah. And I think
sometimes, you know,
I think it's gotten easier. Back when you were doing like Turn the Radio Off, was your first time working with a producer, were you ever like so protective of your songs or bummed out that someone was trying to change your art, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, after I just said I like to hear outside perspectives and people's opinions, at the same time, I'm like, why is this guy telling me what to do? I can't. Yeah, I went through the same stuff too.
Yeah,
you do get really precious with it.
Yeah, you do. And
it was especially weird starting to work with producers and going into real recording studios. What is happening?
Well, and of course, you know.
But I learned a lot, and it was good.
Yeah. And of course our bands have been around long enough to where we were recording. I mean, we went through different stages. I mean, especially back then, our first couple of records, it was like you did take after take of vocals or what have you, because there was no computer. There was no computers to fix it, which is amazing to think now, because gosh, the technology, it's just, you know, thinking, so I mean, some of those records took us forever to do just because we were going to tape versus, you know, going digital. Just a different.
Do you remember seeing anybody like actually cut the tape?
Oh, of course. Yeah. And so for our
crazy. I was like, what are you doing?
for our listeners out there, you know, from the earliest recordings ever made up to, you know, the Beatles, Elvis, Rolling Stones, anybody, Led Zeppelin, they would record to 2-inch tape. And what that meant was it was, you know, 2 inches wide. It was this tape that went on these big reels. I'm sure you've seen the machines in the movies and what have you. And basically, if you wanted things to line up, if you wanted the drums to be perfect or, you know, this vocal to come here, now you just, you know, with a couple clicks of the mouse, you can fix all that. Well, it was actually what Aaron was talking about, was you'd go in with a razor blade and you would actually, you know, take the machine right to the bar, you know, right to the measure of the song, and you would cut the tape, and then you would cut a piece out to make the music essentially in time. And
just take scotch tape and tape it right back together, whatever it
would be. With scotch tape, you'd tape the thing back together, and there it would go around the reel again and be spinning. And I remember when we were doing our Borders and Boundaries record in 2000, our producer, it was the first time we ever saw anybody cut tape. And because we had done Hello Rock View on Pro Tools, and we came back to do this record, and the producer at the time was like, I don't believe he called it Slow Tools. I don't believe in that crap. Cause you know, a lot of producers were either afraid of it or kind of sitting on the fence about Pro Tools at that point. And, so we cut that record, and it took us 2 months, and you couldn't even see the control room window. You couldn't even see, out into the main room where you tracked, because there was just tape covering the whole window. And it was like a 8x6. It was a big window.
All little pieces of your song that you just recorded.
Yeah. Just to think back to
this part and that part.
So to think crazy. Back to going through that tedious process. Thank goodness that's over. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I kind of like nowadays where you just kind of have complete control over it, and he's like, okay, that part was perfect. Let's paste it over here. Nice.
Right. So, you know, going back to like, you know, you guys started out in just, and this is testament to being a great band. I mean, and well, writing great songs. You guys were in a different pool than Less Than Jake was. I mean, we were in Florida in the early 90s. I mean, there was, it was us and like two or three other bands that were quote unquote ska punk. And I mean, yeah. Here you are in Southern California where ska punk kind of, you know,
a hotbed.
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you if I had a dollar for every time, you know, someone said, oh, you guys are from California. I mean, I probably wouldn't be talking to you right now. I mean, we got lumped into that scene because we had, you know, the sound and what have you, but,
you guys were definitely more like a California band than a quote unquote East Coast band. You know,
We weren't from Salt Lake City or we weren't from wherever. We kind of got pigeonholed with the sound, which is fine. But like, what was that like? Because I know what it was like in Florida for us. We stood out like a sore thumb. So like we got attention off the bat because we were different. Like, what was that like trying to navigate like, through that?
As a ska punk band playing with other kinds of bands or in the
Yeah, like how you know, I mean, I could sit here right now and rattle off like 30 bands just off the top of my head from the scene you guys, you know, were spawned out of back in the 90s. Yeah. But what I mean, I guess you guys were you probably didn't think about it at the time. You were just, correct me if I'm wrong, just the next show went to the next show you were playing. But do you remember like being like, holy crap, like how are we going to stand out amongst so much of the same?
I don't know. Early on, like 92, 3. Earlier, it was a lot of more like the two-tone band, ska bands, and you know, serious ska bands, and they're kind of frowned upon the ska punk stuff. But then more and more of those bands started coming along, and we kind of had our own little scene going.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I don't know, it wasn't so much about competition or like how are we going to stand out so much as just like we all played in each other's bands. I mean, I played trombone in like 5 bands, and...
So wait a second. You played trombone?
Not very well, but in those days, if you could make a noise.
I was going to say, how the hell long have I known you for? I've never, ever known that you played trombone, which
this was a long time ago, and I don't really pick it up anymore.
Ah, which kind of...
playing a few bands.
Okay. Well, next time we're on the road, I'm going to make you play trombone. I have to hear this because...
I haven't played in 10 years at least.
You want to hear something ridiculous?
Yeah.
I have never, because, you know, you have to understand, and I'll let the listeners know, you know, horns are a very personal instrument. You have a mouthpiece on the horn that you're basically French kissing for an hour and spitting into and inhaling spit and dirt and whatever else, right? So I've been in a band with horn players now for 28 years. I have never blown into a trombone or a saxophone in my life.
Really?
No, I never have. I wouldn't. I'm almost afraid. Like,
picked it up and said, hey,
never
make a sound in this thing.
No, I mean, I've played drums poorly. I've played the bass poorly. I've played, you know, the piano poorly, but no, I have never, never picked up a horn and tried to blow into it because again, hey buddy, let me borrow your horn. And I, you know, I'm going to stick my tongue in it. Like you're just not going to do that. So it's a very personal instrument. Like if I ever said, hey Aaron, can I play your guitar? You'd be like, sure. Here's my guitar, you know, unless I, you know, just, you know, went to the bathroom, didn't wash my hands or something.
But if you're like, hey, can I borrow your penis pump? I'd be like, no. <That's personal.
laughs> Thank you for injecting some humor into this. I appreciate it. Thank you. I thought I was going to be the one I had to do that.
My cock ring? No, thank you. Personal.
Who says you're not funny, Aaron? Huh?
Jeez. Everyone.
Yeah. so now we did our first tour. And it wasn't long after that, I top of the episode, I was talking about first meeting you. We went out on our first run in June of 95. We did 48 shows in 50 days. What was your first trip out of California? When did you guys first start touring?
That's when I first saw you guys play on that tour.
I don't think it was the first tour because I remember Richard and Stephanie entered
496.
Yeah. Richard and Stephanie from Drive Thru had entered. Yeah. It was early 96. Yeah. Cause they had the magazine Sideshow out at that point and the videos that they would put out. So yeah, it was only a short 5 or 6 months after that first initial tour, that I had met you. So was it around that time? Do you remember your first tour outside of California?
Yeah, we did the first time we ever like went out of state and like got in the van and stayed in hotels and stuff. That was, I think it was 94. It was only probably a week. And we went to Utah, Nevada. Where did we go? Parts of California. I don't know. Not very far away, but it was pretty crazy for us. And a lot of our horn players were under 18. So the guy who was kind of the manager of the band was like, we can't take them out of state.
That's so funny.
We left half the horn section at home. We just had a sax player and a trombone. Only one sax and one trombone. Can you imagine?
Well, I can. Yeah, because that's our band. Yeah. So,
but we toured with a band called Meal Ticket. I don't know if you remember them.
I absolutely had a lady singer. I remember Meal Ticket well. Yes. Yeah. We played. I want to say Meal Ticket was on that show at Dizzy Debbie's. And we were on a compilation with them. I can see it in my head. I mean, that was another big thing was compilations. Do you guys remember being on those? And I touched on this in another episode. Compilations were great because, you know, you knew like, oh, we're going to go into, Columbus, Ohio tonight. And that dude put out this comp with Johnny Quest on it or, you know, whatever song. And like, we knew that when we got there that we would have fans, which,
you know, kind of like having a single released in a way.
It really was.
If the compilation got big and like, oh, I know that song from the comp.
It really was because again, you know, nobody, we weren't at the click of a mouse or the click of a smartphone. We weren't at that disposal where you could like, hey, I'm going to check out this band that's playing, you know, the Chinese restaurant down the road. It was like, I'm just going to go check out this band. And a lot of times you'd be like, oh yeah, that's that band on that comp. And I mean, I can't tell you how many times bands would roll through Gainesville and I only knew one song of theirs, but I loved it. It would be on, you know, this Fat Records comp or a Lookout Records comp. And then you'd go see them and it'd be like, holy shit. You know, like it was cool.
Yeah. We were on the Misfits of Ska, the Mike Park compilation, and that was the first time we ever got fan mail because it was a cool idea. He put all the band's contact information.
Yeah, from each band. That's amazing. You say that because the Misfits of Ska, that was one of the first big compilations that we were on, and that first U.S. tour, we went to the Metro in Chicago, which I believe the Metro holds about, I think it's 1,100 people, the capacity. Wonderful venue. One of my favorites in the world. Yeah, and that first tour, it was a ska fest. It was like us, Suicide Machines, MU330, Bruce Lee Band, and it was sold out. That was the first U.S. tour. And we were just, I mean, you know, first U.S. tour, there'd be some nights, there'd be 100 kids there and it'd be going off. And those are usually the places that we had a song on a comp or something. But, you know, there was nights it was, you know, us playing to the bartender and the door guy and like, you know, one weird kid with purple hair and a bone through his nose or something. You know, it was like.
The one kid in town had heard of you.
Yeah. And like, we get to the, never and it's knew. Like. This sold out show at the Metro, we're like, holy crap, 1,100 people. It's like, we might as well have been playing to a stadium, right? And that we couldn't play the show. There was a blackout. The power had went out on the city. Yeah. The Metro is not too far from Wrigley Field. That whole area went down and police came in, kicked everybody out. We couldn't do the show. We remember selling CDs out of the back of our van, our Pezcore album and fans buying them. But I just remember, and the reason I brought that up is I just remember the excitement from that time. I mean, and of course, a lot of it was because of the firsts, you know, because it was the first, oh my God, we're playing Metro or we're playing here or our song's on a comp or, you know, those firsts you can't ever really get back, which I want to ask, do you remember the first time you ever heard yourself on the radio, Real Big Fish?
Yeah, I think actually Tazy Phillips played us on the Ska Parade. That was the first time we were on the radio.
And that was the impetus for the record, the turn the radio off. You're like, I got to turn this off, right?
Like, this is terrible.
So it was on Tazy's show, and we all know Tazy Phillips. Oh, yeah. Okay, a little bit, no disrespect to Tazy, but let's talk like commercial radio, like big time. Like the first time you heard yourself on K-Rock, was it Sellout?
It was Everything Sucks, actually. They played it on like the local band show. That was our first single from Turn the Radio Off. So this was before Sellout was released as a single.
And what was that like? Do you remember?
I just remember this is so weird. What is this song? Doesn't belong on there. It sounds so strange.
No, because I recently had
doing on there? That's not right.
I recently had John Feldman on, and John was telling me how, you know, he had this uphill climb of you know, doing different things, and finally Goldfinger finally got a record deal, and he had had another band with a deal, and blah, blah, blah. And long story short, you know, John was just like telling the story of how he like had to pull off the side of the road and like just had a moment he heard here in your bedroom. And it's like, oh my God, my song is like, cause you know, we were talking about it and you can attest to this. K-Rock was like the, especially in the 90s, it was like the biggest thing out there. I mean, if you if you got played on K-Rock, I mean, you had to have felt that. You know, I talked about basketball a little bit ago with beer, but like when your song started getting played on K-Rock, especially Sellout, I mean, your shows had to go from, you know, whatever, 600 to like, it had to blow up, right?
Yeah, that was really exciting time. It was just, yeah, K-Rock added it and then all the other stations followed and just playing it more and more. And yeah, the shows got bigger and bigger and just so much excitement.
Yeah, no, it's
it opening up, you know, in small half-filled clubs with Let's Go Bowling to headlining and playing thousands of people. It's pretty cool.
Right, right. And
very exciting just to watch it build and build and build like that.
So do you remember when Mojo, when you got the call or about the deal, like when they wanted to sign you?
Yeah, I guess John Feldman had seen us play at a Halloween show, a Scalloween show. but I don't know, I guess I had like been mouthing off to the sound man because he was trying to cut our set. And I was like, fuck you, I'm going to play one more song. I don't give a shit.
As we used to do.
Of course. So I guess he thought that was really cool. And he brought us to the attention of Mojo. And at the time, we just started getting like deals, you know, where you make your own CD and you find and distributors call you and like, we want to buy 100 of your CDs to sell in Chicago. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I thought it was one of those or like a record store. Like, I'm so-and-so from Mojo Records. Give me a call back. I'm like, oh, another record store. Cool.
That's all. Well, I mean, because Mojo at the time really wasn't like a name yet. I mean,
Goldfinger was the first band that they put out.
Yeah. I mean, you think of Mojo Records, it was you and Goldfinger. It was really nobody else that I can even remember. I mean, you know, so.
Gophers were on it. Cherry Poppin' Daddies.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying at the time.
Oh, later. Yeah,
later. So. which is interesting because I kind of can relate a little bit. So
they're a brand new label. So that was good for us because they were really excited.
Right. We had sent demo tapes and stuff off to Fat Records, Epitaph. Remember getting a letter back from Fat Mike being like, just like something just, I mean, it was really just like straight to the point, like, no. You know, Epitaph never wrote us back. All these labels. And I was delivering pizzas in Gainesville, and I came home one day, and on the answering machine, the little light's blinking, and I hit it, and it's like, yeah, I'm looking for somebody from Less Than Jake. My name is Craig. I'm from Capitol Records. And I'm like, who's yanking my leg here? And they left a number, and we called it, and it was just like, it was crazy because
really Capitol Records. Holy shit.
Well, it was so, you know, because for us, like we had this punk cred we wanted to keep. Yeah, it was like, you know what I mean? Cause the 90s, like nobody cares what label you're on now. Kids would laugh at us. Like you used to care what label you're on. Like nobody, oh, you're a sellout. Like, I mean, no one cares. I mean, you guys wrote a song about it. I mean, you know, like nobody, I mean, even our song, Johnny Quest Thinks We're Sellouts. That was from somebody in the architecture department at the University of Florida. My friend was an architecture major, and he's like, we were starting to get popular in Gainesville, and someone had written Less Than Jake Sucks, or Less Than Jake or Sellouts, and it was signed Johnny Quest, which, you know, Johnny Quest was like a cartoon, and I don't know, maybe he called himself Johnny Quest, this guy, or something, and that's how that song was born out. It was just a stigma, like, if you signed to a major, blah, 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 so... We were like, well, no other label wants to sign us that's a big indie. So like, okay, we'll entertain this idea. And it ended up working out. We did a couple records with them, but it was just such such different times, you know?
Isn't it funny how back then, you did not want to be called a sellout. Oh my God. But now everyone refers to themselves as a brand.
Right. Yeah.
Expanding my brand.
Yeah, I had, yeah.
You got a Facebook page.
That's you got a Facebook.
I guess they're making a lot of money.
You got a Facebook page and a podcast. You run out of your bedroom. But yeah, no, I, but you guys though, and even, you know, Goldfinger at the time signed to Mojo, even though you had a distribution through Universal, there was a lot of labels that kind of hid behind that. It's like, oh, we're an indie. Well, no, you're not. But sometimes, you know, that you had to do that because again, there was this stigma of like, I can't believe you signed to a major. It was such a big thing, which looking back now, it's so funny. But, anyways, man, we're about out of time here. I just wanted to thank you so much for being on the show, number one.
My pleasure.
Number two, I just want to tell you how much I love you and your band. I love the song Beer. I think it's amazing. I still, like I said, how many times have I seen you guys play? And you'll see me. I like to go out and sing the woes at the end of this day. I'll make a little cameo and come out and sing on your guys' stage. And I don't do it for any other reason than I love you guys in the song.
And every time you do it, it scares the shit out of me because you come out of nowhere, grab the microphone. Like, oh, hey,
manhandle you a little bit. So tell the listeners what's going on with you, man. You got anything you'd like to plug or talk about that's going on with you?
We have no new music coming out. We have no tours planned. We have no merchandise to sell you.
All good stuff. Okay. Yeah. That's about it. You're just hanging. Okay. Is there a new Fish record on the horizon? Have you thought about writing a new one yet?
I feel like we just put out the last one. So
yeah. Okay.
I need at least 4 or 5 years between each one.
I think you put the last one out that was December 2018. Am I right?
Yeah.
See? And I didn't even research that, dude. That's recall. That's rock and roll recall right there.
Day in history when a Real Big Fish record comes out.
Well, if that's all you got, I'm gonna let you go. You don't have anything else you want to plug? We want to talk about Walter? Walter's Aaron and his wife's dog.
We have a TikTok account now, so come and
do you really?
Yeah.
What are you doing with that?
Just put like clips of videos and things. I don't know.
Is it under your name?
It's Real Big Fish.
Real Big Fish. Well, go follow Real Big Fish on TikTok and all the other socials. They're out there. They're easy to find. And Aaron, thank you very much for giving me your time, and I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, sir.
All right, buddy. Tell your wife I said hello.
She's been listening this whole time.
Hi, Krista.
So is Walter.
How are you?
Walter, sing it. Sing it, Walter.
Sing it, boy. Woo!
Hey, there he goes. That's a beautiful voice.
That's gonna start the episode off right there. he actually sings better than Matt Wong used to. Don't print that.
Matt Wong had a beautiful falsetto voice.
He still does. All right, guys, you take care. I love you both.
Love you, Chris.
Bye.
All right, bye, guys.
Love you, Chris Pafalios.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know, where each week I will preview a select band of my choice, tell you a little bit about the band, where they're from, where to find their music, and how to find them on social media. It's simple, really. If you'd like your band to be previewed on Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is submit your song and bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. Again, that's bandyoumightnotknow, all one word, @gmail.com. And all I ask for is a good quality recording of a song that you feel best represents your band. And going a little out of the norm this week, I want this segment to strictly be for original band content, no cover bands, but I made an exception this week. This week's featured band is called Wutin Tarnation. That's Wuttin, Tarnation, Tarnation. And I saw a couple YouTube videos of these guys. One of their members is Scott Reynolds from the band All, a dear friend of mine, and they do cover songs true to form. And I was like, wow, these guys are really cool. They don't try to punk them up or anything. And anyhow, they reached out to me to sing on a track, and I agreed because it was just a lot of fun. And anyways, we got Matt Morris on the drums, Brad Edwards on guitar. They hail from Texas. And Greg Gleason on bass from Mesa, Arizona. Davi Pacotti on guitar from Porto Alegre, Brazil. And the aforementioned Scott Reynolds on backing vocals on this track. And yours truly on lead vocals. You can find What in Tarnation on Facebook. They have a group there. On Instagram at What in Tarnation Band. And you can find all their stuff on YouTube under What in Tarnation, including this song. Here's a snippet of our take on the Cars hit Magic.
Summer, it turns me upside down. A summer, 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 it's like a merry-go-round. I see you under the midnight, all shackles and bows. The high shoes.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
So one thing I was thinking about while you were interviewing Aaron is the fact that, you know, I've liked Real Big Fish for a very long time. Fortunately, I've got to tour with Real Big Fish, and they are an amazing live band, and they have a ton of great songs. But I've never really thought about this till now, and I think this is a recent development, like, in my music taste. But I think Beer is my favorite Real Big Fish song. There's something about that song that sounds a little more timeless than a lot of other Real Big Fish songs. Not saying the rest of the Real Big Fish songs aren't great. I just think that this is my favorite Real Big Fish song.
Yeah, you know, I can't argue with that. I think there's something to be said about the fact that they close each of their shows with it. It's just, you know, it's a great song to leave the building and have that still humming in your head as you go to get in your car in a parking lot and leave the venue. It's just like, there's definitely something just catchy. And I kind of agree with you. I never would have said this was, you know, one of my favorite songs years ago, maybe from them. And now it is, you know, just from doing so many shows with them over the years and hearing the song over and over, and just the crowd response that it gets. It's just when they launch into it, the place goes nuts.
And I think it's relatable, too. I mean, not everybody drinks, so I guess it's probably not that relatable to straight edge people or whatever. But for the most part, who hasn't been going through something and then drank a lot and been that friend that your friends had to, like, you know, pick up off the floor and do whatever. I mean, I feel like most people have been there. So it's kind of like brings up that feeling. I mean, for me, it makes me feel like, okay, everybody's been there. And even if you're embarrassed about it, it's okay. It happens, you know? And I think that's part of the allure of the song too. I mean, sure, it's a catchy song. I love the lead. I love the woo-hoo-hoos. Like, it's just all that stuff. It's just so good. Such a good chorus. Have so many good memories to it. And I think it's one of those songs where the lyrical content as well is very relatable to people.
Yeah, you know, and I didn't have to yank Aaron's toenails out with a rusty pair of pliers to get him to pick this song. He just went, I want to go with Beer. I was like, all right, you know. Which was great, because you know, this is one of their most popular songs, and I knew that the listeners would want to know about it. And I was also very thankful that Aaron even agreed to be on the show. He is about as anti-rock star as you get and reserved. If you've never met Aaron, you know, or if you just met him on the street, you would never imagine that he's in a world-renowned popular ska band that travels the world and plays to thousands of people. Just very reserved. When we're out on the road with him, he has all the other guys in his band do the interviews. He just doesn't like doing it. I had texted him and I thought, okay, I'm gonna have to really stay on him about this. And he texted me almost immediately back and said, yeah, I'd love to do it. And I was like, what? So I was excited about that.
Yeah, it's crazy, because honestly, it's like when you're in a band, and especially if you're a front man of a band, it's almost like you're expected to also be like a PR person for the band. And a lot of people that write songs that are musicians aren't you aren't necessarily that, you know? And fortunately you're good at it, man. I mean, you have this podcast and you've always been good at that. And some people are naturally good at that, but some people aren't. And that doesn't mean it's something bad about them.
No, you know? It's just like the old type A, type B personality. And some people, you know, and there was, you know, years ago I would hear about publicists or managers of like, oh, the artist doesn't give an interview. I'm like, well, how pompous and blah, blah, blah are they? And now I totally get it. I mean, if you're not that person, you know, and I can relate kind of on a level, you know, like I can get out and play to, you know, 20,000 people at a festival and have not one iota of fear entering that stage. I'm just kind of pumped up, want to play, I'm excited. But if you told me I had to go down the road and give a speech to 30 people at a university or something, I'd be like, whoa, I don't have my band behind me. And
exactly.
And, you know,
I was just thinking that same exact thing. It's like when we're in our element, I'm the same way. Like when I'm up on a stage and I'm with my band, I say the stupidest shit and like, have no problem talking to a room of it could be 1,000 people in that room. I have no problem talking, but yeah, take me out of my element and not surrounded by my bandmates and people that like my band and put me, I think back, like if I had to give a speech in front of like a college class or something when I was in college, like, and I am nervous and out of my element and I don't want to do that at all. So, that's a weird thing, man, for sure. You'd think it would translate to everywhere, but it really doesn't.
Yeah, you know, and this band though, I mean, real Big Fish, you know, we had certainly, you know, crossed paths with them over the years, but it was the summer of 2007. We started this thing together called the Shout It Loud Tour. And we went out with Real Big Fish that summer. And that's when we became like one family with those guys. And since then, we've toured together almost every year, been all over the world. You know, if Less Than Jake is good for 800 tickets in Omaha on a Thursday night and Real Big Fish is good for that, you'd surmise, okay, there's going to be 1,600 people there. And it's like, no, there's 2,500. It's like 1 + 1 = 3 with those guys. Fans come out in droves. It's like a timepiece from the 90s, you know, where that nostalgia thing where they want to come and relive a night with two of their favorite bands. And we just love touring with those guys. It's so much fun.
I mean, when I think, I mean, from my perspective, at least, you two are, I mean, I guess you two and Mighty Mighty Bosstones are the most, well-known and most, I mean, had the most influence on me as a kid, bands from that third wave of ska. When I think third wave of ska, it's Less Than Jake, Real Big Fish, Bosstones. I kind of throw Suicide Machines in there, that they were more like a little bit more punk rock, but like, yeah, that's so it makes sense, man. And it's awesome that you guys tour together. Like amazing show.
And, you know, the other thing that I don't think we touched on this in the episode, I just got to thinking, you jogged a memory, was just the, you know, coming up with them in the 90s and running in the same circles. I remember Capitol Records wanted to release Johnny Quest Thinks We're Sellout as a single. And we're like, we can't do that. Real Big Fish, you know, they're already at radio with a song called Sellout. So they beat us to the punch, damn it. But there was I don't want to say competition, but there was that weird thing that, like, you know, you used to think about, oh, we can't do that. This band has that you necessarily don't think about today.
Right.
So once again, I want to thank my friend Aaron Barrett from Real Big Fish for making some time for me. Like I said, I was very surprised that he was willing to grant me an interview. I feel special. So thank you, Aaron. And keep those custom songs and animation requests coming. Chris and I have been busy. So thank you. Chris has been drawing up a storm. His hand's been cramping.
My hand hurts.
His hand hurts. I've been writing a lot of songs and jingles for you, your business, for your brand. It's been a lot of fun. For more information on that, you can email me at kristamakes@gmail.com. To see some of our work, you can go to kristamakes.com. That'll redirect you to the YouTube page where you can see Chris's animations and some of my custom songs. You know, please subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. If you haven't already, join the Krista Makes a Podcast Facebook group. It's super easy to join. All you have to do is submit who you'd like to see. on the show. And then you'll be in the group. It's a lot of fun. It's been very interactive. Once again, thanks to everybody out there for listening, and we'll see you next week.